Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, this is what Rex and I call a tear up the rundown kind of day. We came into this podcast episode fully planning on discussing Brooks Koepka's much anticipated return at Torrey Pines, maybe even something on the looming official world golf ranking decision. Yes, we are going to get into that in this episode, but instead, Rex, we got a statement from Patrick Reed, from the PGA Tour, and from LIV Golf at about midday on Wednesday, saying that Patrick Reed intends to return to the PGA Tour later this year. What you need to know is he is essentially serving a one-year suspension from when he last played an unauthorized event that was on LIV Golf in August 2025. And so he'll be eligible to play once again the PGA Tour this fall as a past champion on the PGA Tour, or as we outlined on the Sunday night / Monday episode, he could, Rex, qualify for the PGA Tour by virtue of finishing in the top 10 of the season-ending Race to Dubai standings on the DP World Tour, which is where he intends to ply his trade in 2026. Whenever he comes back, what are you thinking at this point as it relates to the Tour's decision to reinstate eventually Patrick Reed later this fall?
Well, I don't want to jump ahead to what we can expect later this fall whenever he decides, because there are still some moving parts to that. We both assume, I think statistically, it makes sense that he will finish inside the top 10 on the DP World Tour and come back to the PGA Tour in 2027 with full status, pretty much. A good card and have a chance to play his way into the signature events.
He's also like Marco Penge.
He's also top 30 in the world, and he's qualified for the majors this year. So he's got a lot of things going in his favor on that front. I wanted to circle back around to the idea. As a golf fan, I'm excited about Patrick Reed coming back. We've had this conversation now for, it's ironic, the last 2 days. Actually, you and I talked about it on the podcast on Monday morning, that if you're Brian Rolapp and you're sitting at home watching that finish on Sunday from Dubai on your couch, and you hear the words that are coming out of Patrick Reed's mouth saying how much he loves the tour, it's the best tour in the world, it's the most competitive tour in the world, and you also hear that, oh, I don't have a contract with LIV this year, you had to think to yourself, the idea being that we kind of picked 2022 as just a random date. Like I understand why why they picked the returning member program, that it created a carve out for four very specific players: Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith, John Rahm, and Bryson DeChambeau. It looks like only Brooks Koepka is going to take advantage of that, and it's because they had won majors or the Players Championships since 2022. I see the logic behind it. LIV Golf started in 2022. That makes sense. But if you're making the rules, how come you just can't say, no, let's do 2018? That's the year that Patrick Reed won the Masters, and allow him back. Because as a golf fan, as a fan of the PGA Tour, I would say he definitely makes the product better. And the reason why, every good story needs an antagonist and a hero. There's a reason why all those great Westerns had characters that wore white hats and black hats. I think the analogy that our good friend Todd Lewis gave on the telecast this afternoon was a wrestling analogy, that you need the heel and you also need the hero. Like, that's just the way these stories worked. You and I have had this conversation before. The one thing that LIV Golf truly did is it took all of the bad guys from the PGA Tour. It took all the antagonists. It took all of that tension that you get. Brooks Koepka was at the top of that list. Patrick Reed's at the top of that list for a lot of weird reasons. Bryson DeChambeau's on that list. So you're going to make the tour better. And if you're Brian Rolapp, that's one check. The other thing is you're going to take away from LIV's product, which is also a check. And look, it's incremental. We can sit here and argue about what kind of impact Patrick Reed had on LIV Golf, but you're accomplishing two big things. Now, I was actually at a dinner last night with a tour official, and we're having this conversation about, in theory, what would it look like if Patrick Reed came back? And I'm not going to sit here and lie. I did not know this was on the horizon, but it seemed pretty obvious. And we're sort of just going down the list of things he would probably have to do. And the one thing that I did say was, what's to stop Brian Rolapp from just being like, I know I said 2022, I meant 2018. You know how you get numbers. And the official was really quick, being in very serious, and he goes, we're not going to do that. And now I see why. It would not have landed nearly as well with the membership the way Brooks Koepka did. I have not found one player here at Torrey Pines who will tell me that, no, Brooks should not be back. It's not fair. It's not fair to us. It's not fair to the tour. Haven't found one. They may disagree with it, but they know this is best for the product. It's best for the PGA Tour. Patrick Reed would be a different scenario, man. Like, he is not Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it certainly would be, it would certainly be a different scenario. And when we talked on Sunday night about Patrick Reed winning in Dubai, we did it in the last segment. because I don't think any of us really anticipated that he was going to state his intentions to return to the PGA Tour in 2026. It could have been a byproduct by what he did on the DP World Tour, but I think we all anticipated that he was just going to renew his contract. He now had a little bit more leverage when negotiating with the Saudis. But clearly, when you read the LIV Golf statement, they said that they could not reach terms on a contract extension as it related to Patrick Reed. And so he will continue to play on the DP World Tour. You're going to see him all over the world, just like he was planning to play all over the world anyway in 2026. And now it's up to him to finish among the top 10. When we did that podcast, when I came on Golf Today on Monday, I did say, Rex, that if you are Brian Rolapp, that is absolutely a conversation worth having. Because I do think Patrick Reed elevates the fields competitively, which I think is obvious. He's a top 30 player in the world, which is pretty remarkable for a player who does not earn world golf ranking points on the tour that he plies his trade most often. He's a 9-time winner on the PGA Tour. He's won all over the world. He still has one of the best short games. Like, I think he's a very interesting player just inside the ropes. But I think there's the whole entertainment factor as well, where you want to have players who have flavor, who have character, who have depth, who has backstories. You can call him a villain. You can call him an antagonist, whatever you want. He brings that to the PGA Tour product. And Brian Rolapp, the CEO of the PGA Tour, comes from an NFL world. And that league is based on a lot of things, and it's built on a lot of things. But a lot of that is animosity, bad blood, competitive friction, some competitive tension, rivalries. Those all sort of meld together into what is the most entertaining, most significant, most influential sports media entity that we have in this country. And if, yes, Patrick Reed is a very small part of that, but he plays a part of that. And the PGA Tour, I think, has been accused of being vanilla, a little bit bland, since a lot of these characters and a lot of these villains left in 2022. If you can have the opportunity to bring him back, I think the PGA Tour is right in doing so.
And it's important to also take a step back and do a timeline on this, because this decision was not made over the last 3 days since Patrick Reed won in Dubai. According to various people I've spoken to, the idea was first broached from Patrick Reed's camp when they announced that Brooks Koepka would be coming back under this new program that the tour created. That was about 2 weeks ago. So this has been in the works. It was also interesting. I was talking with someone who was on the policy, was on the Player Advisory Council in 2024, Lonto Griffin, yesterday, just about a lot of different things. But he was saying in the summer of 2024 is when this first concept came up. They started formulating exactly what this program would look like. If the top players, if the players that we want, and that's a quote, if the players that we want to come back, how do we carve that out? And they did a good job creating that. But it's important to point out that this is not a loophole, that Patrick Reed didn't get any kind of special treatment. There's already three other players who left LIV Golf that are on the exact same pathway as him: Hudson Swafford, Kevin Na, and Pat Perez. All three renounced their membership of LIV Golf and reapplied for membership to the PGA Tour, and they're essentially all being held to the same standards. I actually sent the player memo to Hudson Swafford this morning just to make sure, like, this is exactly what they told you. And he's like, yep, that's the exact same pathway they've created. So there have been no special pathway. There's been no special loopholes created for Patrick Reed, and I think that's important.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to point out. And I tried to make the point earlier that there already has been a line of demarcation that the PGA Tour has set, right? With this returning member program, they essentially outlined, here's the four guys we really want. And that's Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, and Cameron Smith. Everyone else, would it be additive? Would it be beneficial? Sure. But you're going to have some sort of punishment. You're going to have some to pay some sort of penance. And there's going to be, I think, varying levels and degrees to which they would want those players back. Like, I don't think a Patrick Reed is identical to a Joaquin Niemann, who might not be identical to a David Puge, but all of them have sort of ran afoul of certain PGA Tour regulations. Their sit-out period is going to be different and the like. But I do think overall, Patrick Reed, the addition when he comes back to the PGA Tour in the fall, will be very, very important in that respect.
And I do, to play devil's advocate here, there's a reason why Patrick Reed would not fall into that category, other than the fact that he doesn't fall into the competitive window of having won a major or a player since 2022. There were some players who left the PGA Tour to go to LIV Golf, and they did it quietly. They didn't make a mess on the way out the door. They renounced their tour membership. They didn't say anything negative about the tour in public. And probably most importantly, they didn't join a lawsuit. Patrick Reed's not one of those. He made a mess on the way out the door and when he was at LIV Golf. And he filed multiple lawsuits. Look, Hudson Swafford was part of the lawsuit that tried to get a temporary restraining order to play in the playoffs that year in 2022, the year he left. Patrick Reed filed a much broader lawsuit, not just against the PGA Tour, but against Tiger Woods specifically, against Rory McIlroy specifically, against the media, including Golf Channel, not you and I specifically, thank goodness. But against, maybe that's it. No, you weren't named in the lawsuit. You were just told not to erase anything on your computer, yes. So he made a mess on the way out the door. Like, this isn't just a personality conflict, and there is plenty of personality conflict when it comes to Patrick Reed and PGA Tour players, but this is going to be a la carte. The PGA Tour has made it clear. It is not a one-size-fits-all for these players who want to come back to the PGA Tour, and this is a good example of that.
One thing I wanted to hone in on is the reaction to the membership. We're going to get to Brooks Koepka and his return. He had about a half-hour press conference on Tuesday that I think was pretty illuminating in some ways as well. But you made the point, Rex, that you don't believe that the Patrick Reed situation will land the same with folks in the locker room. Just curious why you believe that. Obviously, I think the personality has something to do with it as well. Brooks Koepka continues to hold close friendships with a lot of the players who remained on the PGA Tour, where Patrick Reed, for better or worse, has sort of been an iconoclast through his career.
Well, I think I just touched on that. Like, not only are there personality conflicts, where there's plenty of players in the locker room just at the hill at Torrey Pines who simply do not like Patrick Reed. This has been pretty well covered over the course of his career. Go back to the University of Georgia days, and we can start naming your beloved Bulldogs who were very outspoken when it comes to not particularly liking Patrick Reed for whatever reason when they were on the team together. I'm not choosing sides here. These are just facts. Just, again, Cignetti, Google it. It's pretty easy to find these things. And as I pointed out, he made a mess on the way out the door. Like, this isn't just one singular lawsuit. It's important to point out, a player like Hudson Swafford, actually, as soon as he realized he wasn't going to make the playoffs in 2022, he withdrew his name from the lawsuit. That's all he was trying to accomplish. He wasn't trying to get money. He wasn't trying to get status. He was just trying to take advantage of what he thought was owed to him, which was a spot in the playoffs. Misguided. Clearly misguided. I'm not going to make excuses for that. It was an entirely different scenario when it comes to Patrick Reed. Those lawsuits were rolling for months. Subpoenaed Tiger Woods. Subpoenaed Rory McIlroy. All of these things that go into it. It's going to land ugly. And I think what the tour has done again, what Brian Rolep has done again, is a very savvy workaround where instead of trying to go out of his way to create a loophole for Patrick to come back immediately, he simply put him in line with everyone else using the exact same regulations. It's really hard to argue against those, even if you don't like Patrick.
Yeah, with the question of how this sit in the locker room, I don't even think it matters. Because if the PGA Tour is operating on the core mission that we are trying to deliver the best product to our fans, what the fans have told the PGA Tour over and over again is that they want something close to reunification or as close as they can get in this divided landscape. And this certainly helps. It's not a salve. It doesn't fix everything, but it certainly helps. And so Brian Rolep, with the memo that he sent to players now, I think was sort of the messaging that we're going to see over the next 6 to 9 months, particularly if there's any sort of trickle-down effect or players who want to leave LIV Golf. He needs to explain to players who, again, are now co-owners of the PGA Tour in a financial sense, why competitive friction, why you being upset about Patrick Reed being back on the tour is actually a good thing. The NFL was built on rivalries and tension and drama and bad blood. Having at least a small dose of that on the PGA Tour makes for compelling television. It makes people want to tune in. It makes for better storylines throughout the week. Obviously, you don't want the PGA Tour to be overrun with this. You don't want it to be rampant and outright hostility. You can't have Raiders fans and Broncos fans, something like that on the PGA Tour, where Rory fans and Patrick Reed fans are jawing at each other and have people by the neck. But I do think any sort of simmering hostilities, any sort of lingering animosity, I think overall makes for pretty good television when you're talking about the regular season on the PGA Tour.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And if you were going to, if you're looking at this logically from a player's point of view, if you're going to push back on anything, you're going to push back on Brooks because the tour went out of its way to create this loophole. And they did a good job of selling the notion that, look, this makes us better. It hurts LIV and it makes us better. So if you're going to be upset about anything, it would be Brooks. And as I pointed out, Brooks, by and large, has been welcome back, at least here at Torrey Pines. It'll be interesting to see what you see next week, certainly in Phoenix, because those crowds are going to be a little bit different, a little bit more outspoken from what we get here in San Diego. I will say this, and this was my column yesterday on golfchannel.com. This is what I touched on in my Golf Today hit after Brooks's press conference. He did the one thing that I wasn't 100% sure he could do in that press conference. He showed contrition, and I felt like he needed to show some level of contrition. And I was doubtful because you and I have covered Brooks a long time. I didn't think that was one of his 14 clubs. I didn't think he had that in his bag simply because he's always been larger than life. I think the line that I used was he's a self-made wolf and he likes to be among the sheep. Like this is what he leans into, the idea that he's bigger than life and he's going to pull his shoulders back and he's going to out-tough you on the golf course. Doesn't care about regular tour events, only cares about the majors. We can keep going on and on about that. There is nothing that we saw today in numerous statements, one from Patrick Reed, one from the tour, one from Liv Goff, that would suggest that Patrick Reed has any interest in contrition. It will be interesting that when the time comes, whenever that comes in the fall, it could be, we were kind of looking at the schedule, it could be a number of different events. Certainly, he's qualified for the first one, which I think would be in Asheville, the new North Carolina event. That's probably the first one he would be qualified for. I'm not quite sure he would play it because the DP World Tour is also sort of in the middle of their season at that point. He may still be working, trying to secure his tour card for 2027. It'll be interesting to see if when we finally get him in front of the cameras, if he shows the same level of contrition, because I think Brooks did a really good job in sort of this rehabilitation comeback, talking with the press the way he did on Tuesday. I don't know that Patrick Reed is going to be the same.
Yeah, and I don't know that he necessarily needs to, because the pathway that has been set forth for Brooks Koepka and Patrick Reed are wildly different scenarios. The tour essentially cleared any obstacle and handpicked him and said, we want you to come back. Whereas they're lumping Patrick Reed in with a Kevin Na and a Hudson Swafford and a Pat Perez and saying, if you want to come back, here's the guidelines. At least now there's a little bit of clarity on those situations. I like where you're spinning this now to Brooks Koepka, because that was the news just 24 hours ago. Brooks Koepka meeting with the media, you in San Diego, playing his opening round of the Farmers Insurance Open, at least the first two rounds, on ESPN. It's the first time we have seen ESPN broadcast a PGA Tour event in two decades. Listening in, it was broadcast. We had it simulcast on Golf Today on Tuesday. I didn't find Brooks Koepka to be regretful. I didn't find him to be hostile. It wasn't like he was filled with animus. Like, he sounded genuinely appreciative and grateful for the opportunity, both on the LIV side, to be fair, with Scott O'Neill, Yasir Al-Ramayan, letting him out of his deal a year early out of his contract, and also to the PGA Tour, to Tiger Woods, who he said who was his first call, and Brian Rolopp, who eventually spearheaded what became the return in member program. I did think it was notable, Rex, that Brooks Koepka invoked his family 14 times in the press conference, saying that he doesn't really want to play that mostly international schedule anymore, that his family over the past couple of years hasn't been able to travel with him, wants them to be by his side this year while he plays on the PGA Tour. You may recall that Brooks's wife, Jenna, posted on social media last fall that the couple suffered a miscarriage with their second child. And so, you know, the situation existed that Brooks Koepka could have been put in the penalty box. He could have had to sit out a year plus per PGA Tour regulations and rules and play the European Tour and be away from his family. But the PGA Tour did not make that option available to him. They made it as easy as it could possibly be. He sounded genuinely grateful for the opportunity. I think that's why you heard some of the contrition too.
After family, my guess is grateful was the word that was mentioned most often in that press conference. And Brooks did a good job of staying on message. He wasn't critical of Liv Goff. And this is a little cynical, but my guess is the negotiations to get out of that last year of the contract with the public investment fund included some version of, okay, you're not going to disparage us. Yeah, you're not going to disparage us on the way out the door. The tour didn't have that luxury when a lot of players were leaving the PGA Tour, but he did. He stayed on message. And I think he did a good job of that. I would also point out that he did mention his family, and he didn't allow himself to go down the road that we all kind of thought. Like, you can sit here and say that maybe, and you and I have said it numerous times, that 54 holes of team golf with shorts on and loud music isn't the best way for a Brooks Koepka, who is wired differently, to prepare for the biggest events, the major championships. We've said the same thing about John Rahm. He didn't allow that to go. He didn't allow himself to go down that road, which was probably wise as well. And like I said, he showed the proper level of contrition. I will say that there is the same DNA in Brooks now that was there when he left in 2022. Because the one question, and you asked me this on the pod on Monday, what did I want to ask him? And I asked him, if I could put you in a Wayback machine and send you back to 2022, do you make any different decisions? And he was very quick coming back to me that I have no regrets. And there's a little bit of the old Brooks in there in that one. That, look, I'm appreciating this, and I certainly am going to take advantage of it. And I'm thankful for the tour giving me this opportunity. But I'm not going to sit here and second guess these decisions. When you go back in time, knowing what we know now, that he was injured, he didn't know where his career was going, and maybe the bag of money was the best option. Now, fast forward, clearly it wasn't. But it was the press conference he needed to give. You and I say it all the time. He won the press conference. The next test will be the fans on Thursday. He said he's nervous about what to expect from the fans. He doesn't know if they're going to be vocal. He doesn't know if they're going to boo him. I don't think that happens this week. My guess is he'll get an earful of that next week. The third constituency is the one that was the most fascinating to me. He said he was nervous about meeting with the media, said he was nervous about the fans on Thursday. And then when someone asked about, well, what about the players in the locker room, you know, smoothing things over with them? No, I'm good with that. I'm looking forward to that.
That certainly is interesting. Wyndham Clark has really been the only player on the record who at least has said that the reaction is sort of mixed, that he didn't quite know how to feel, which I think, you know, in the heart of hearts, I think that maybe not the majority of players, but certainly a minority of players, I think that's an understandable way to think about it. You mentioned Brooks Koepka winning the press conferences. And Rex, I will say, like, every situation, every player, every contract on LIV is different. And some are perfectly content playing on LIV and they don't really have greater aspirations. But I will say that Brooks Koepka's press conference was powerful for two reasons. If you're a LIV player who is at least maybe even considering or had some second thoughts. First reason is that he outlined how the PGA Tour was going to be a better situation for his family. And that had to hit home for anyone who is between the age of 26 and 38 who are about to embark on the LIV golf season just this spring that will involve trips to Saudi Arabia, Australia, Hong Kong, and Singapore. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not for everybody to have a mostly international schedule, particularly if you're an American. But the second one, Rex, and it happened at the end of the press conference, was Brooks Koepka talking specifically about going up against the Scottie Schefflers and the Rory McIlroys of the world. Keeping in mind that Brooks Koepka is not eligible to play in the signature events. So unless Scottie and Rory are dropping down and playing mostly full field events, there's actually a chance that Brooks still only sees them a handful of times a year at the major championships and the Players' Championship as well. But Brooks said, as a competitor, I want to measure myself against the best in the world. And so I'm looking forward to taking on Scottie and Rory at the height of their powers. The reason why I think that's important, because when Brian Rolapp unveiled that returning member program, the reason why I think it was so savvy is that he's putting all of the onus now on those players. And they've already been paid a really handsome amount of money. And do you covet and long for something more than that? That's essentially the question that the PGA Tour and Brian Rolapp is asking those players. And you then have to signal your intentions to golf fans as well. Yes, I'm more interested in earning a lot of money. Or do I want what Brooks wants? Do I want some normalcy? Do I want to prioritize my family once again? Do I also want to prioritize competitively playing against the very best players in the world in a Scottie Scheffler and a Rory McIlroy with more regularity? I think that's a really interesting dynamic because that falls squarely on the head of John Rahm and the decision he has to make with that February 2nd deadline looming.
And I think that's fair. And the tour actually said today in their memo to players that they don't anticipate any of the other three players who are qualified to come back to the tour under this new program to take up that offer. I don't think John Rahm's going to do it. It's February 2nd. So we're less than a week away right now from the deadline. I do want to point out, and I am curious about this, that when the vast majority of these players left to go to the PGA Tour to go to LIV Golf, the very first and probably only reasoning was I want to spend more time with my family. So it seems to me that we've sort of come around on this whole idea that so now you actually spent less time with your family going to LIV Golf, playing fewer events, by the way. You played vastly fewer events if you were on LIV Golf than you probably did on the PGA Tour. I understand the international schedule traveling is difficult. And I also understand that if you're a Patrick Reed or a Brooks Koepka or any of the other players who may come back eventually, you need to tiptoe around this probably. There are contracts involved. There's probably a lot of small print, probably a lot of things you can't say. I'm just a little tired of hearing about, you can't have it both ways. Were you spending more time with your family there than you are here or here than you are there? Like, I'm sort of wrestling with this, but it's a good point that you make. You're sort of making decisions now. I'll look at it from a different, through a different lens, because essentially what we have now is what we haven't had, sort of this vacuum of information that's been around since 2022. What would the pathway look like to come back? And by actually creating this very stringent, very clear pathway, I think it now applies a level of reasoning. Whereas before, you didn't know what was going to happen if you were John Rahm. I was going to go away. I was going to take this money and spend 3 or 4 years on LIV Golf. And you guessed you could come back to the PGA Tour eventually. You hoped you could come back to the PGA Tour eventually, but you weren't sure. Now that we've actually seen it on paper, it actually, in a weird way, might make the decision easier one way or the other for players in the future.
Yeah, there's at least clarity now, whereas it has been essentially ambiguous since LIV launched in 2022 exactly what the pathway was going to be like. Again, I don't think there's going to be a mass exodus. I don't think the floodgates are all of a sudden open, but at least now we have clarity, and that's something. I love, Rex, hearing that skepticism out of you, that cynicism out of you. That's usually my position on this podcast, but to hear you sick and tired of players citing family commitments as a reason for their decision, I'm Which absolutely loving. Also, Rex, I will say, along the same lines, as a skeptic, as a cynic, it's now essentially up to Brooks Koepka to make this more than just a one-month story. And to make it, yes, everyone's tuned in to the Farmers Insurance Open, and they'll likely follow next week at the Phoenix Open as well. But this is a player, Rex, who I think we actually have some questions about, for the very first time in his career, about what he can actually still do inside the ropes. You know, you look at Data Golf's rankings, which doesn't just factor in the official World Golf ranking. He's 162 in Data Golf's rankings. And he's the first to admit, as Brooks Koepka did on Tuesday, and I've always admired this about him, he just didn't play well enough in 2025. It's the first time in his career he's missed the cuts in 3 of the 4 major championships. He wasn't competitive in the back half of the LIV Golf season as well. Obviously, he had that off-course distraction with his family, and that's understandable, but he wasn't making excuses for it. Quite frankly, he said, I just didn't play well enough. And so Brooks Koepka, again, for this PGA Tour season that we're focused on, and he's about to make his debut in 2026 on Thursday, he's going to have to try and play a lot of golf to get into those signature events, which again, only run through June 2nd. And so he's playing Torrey, he's playing Phoenix, he's already signed up for the Cognizant Classic in his hometown in South Florida, the Players' Championship a couple of weeks after that. But if he does not, Rex, play his way into those elevated events, all of a sudden you're probably going to see him tack on starts in Tampa, tack on starts in Houston, tournaments that he's played prior to his LIV Golf departure. You're going to see potentially Brooks Koepka in a lot of markets and a lot of tournaments that we're not used to. I think that's great for the PGA Tour. It increases the attention and interest in those tournaments, but it's up to Brooks Koepka now to play well, and that's where the focus should be at this point.
Yeah, the conversation yesterday on the range here at Torrey Pines had to do with would Brooks make the cut this week or not? And to me, that's a little insulting, but and I guess it could go both ways, the idea. But I mean, it's probably a legitimate question. I think he does make the cut. I've spoken with some folks at Strixon who have been working with him the last few weeks. He actually looks in the best shape I've seen him in a long time. He's swinging the club well, but this is a different level of golf. I think one of the things that comes from people I talk to who either play on LIV Golf or caddy over there or have been associated with that tour, it's the golf courses that they play, the quality is much less than what you see on the PGA Tour. Not only is the quality much less, but it's also easier. You kind of look at the scores at LIV Golf events. By and large, I think a few years ago when they were at Orange County National in Central Florida, Orange County National was home to one of my favorite golf courses in Central Florida. They didn't play that one. They played the one that's not very good. They played Crooked Cap. Panther Lake is the good one at Orange County National. If anyone's coming to Florida and just curious, wants to play Orange County National. And by and large, I think that's sort of the MO when it comes to LIV Golf. They've struggled to get championship quality golf courses. I think John Rahm, in his own way, has put voice to this about how it's hard to get ready for Augusta or Shinnecock later this year when you're playing these golf courses that essentially 33 under is going to win these things. This is going to be a different test. I was teasing Brooks's caddy yesterday coming off the golf course, Ricky. He was kind of limping, and I'm like, it's been a while since you've caddied on a big boy golf course, isn't it? And he admitted, like, yeah, it's been a minute. So this week will be interesting. Next week will be a little bit different. I don't think anybody thinks TPC Scottsdale is a tough test. I think it'll be more the crowd next week. But yeah, I think you're right. Now he has to deliver. Now he has to prove that he's still a top 30, top 20, top 10 player in the world. We didn't see it the last year. Here's his opportunity.
Yeah, the LIV has made some strides, I would say, schedule-wise, adding Valderrama. They also have the golf course in South Korea where they used to host.
Valderrama is not a very good golf course. I'm going to correct you on that.
But it's tough.
It's not a good golf course. So don't.
But it's tough. But it's tough. It's a good test.
A lot of bad golf courses can be good, but I mean, it's not.
But again, it's also not a Lynx golf course where if you're trying to prepare for the Open Championship, that is not where you want to do so. But yeah, Brooks Koepka returning to what he is used to, at least before LIV Golf. Very curious to see how he plays on what is historically, traditionally, one of the most difficult venues on the PGA Tour on the South Course at Torrey Pines. Rex, what else has your attention this week? I know you're heading out of town in a couple of days. We'll not stick around for the finale so we can do the show together on Sunday. I think of Cam Young, who is making his debut on the PGA Tour this year. Xander Schauffele playing for the first time since October, since he won in Japan. Ludvig Åberg was the winner the last time a tournament was held at Torrey Pines, even if it was the Genesis Invitational, not necessarily the Farmers Insurance Open, WD last week at the American Express. What else has your eye?
I think it's your boy X. He spoke with the media yesterday. I had a chance to talk with him a little bit. He seems relaxed. Clearly, and we've had this conversation about Scotty, the idea that he's coming into this year after last year's offseason, which was clearly derailed because of injury. Exact same thing for Xander. It took Xander longer to sort of play his way out of that injury, to play his way out of everything that went into. It makes sense. The oblique injury is really tough when it comes to the golf swing and the torque and the physical exertion that it takes to swing at that speed. I think he's in a different spot this time around, a lot like Scotty was. We saw it last week at the American Express where he was able to do the things in the offseason that have made him Xander throughout the course of his career. I'm not going to allow you to fall into that trap where I'm sure in the next couple of weeks you'll start claiming he's going to be the player of the year. I'm going to caution you just to stop you.
I have a feeling Scotty's going to be the player of the year this year.
So I'm going to stop you right in your tracks. Mount Scotty is still going to be a tough climb, but I see a very good bounce back year from Xander. And he's normally played Torrey Pines very well. We know his history on this golf course. So I'm curious to see how he plays, but I mean, I'll go back to Brooks. I'm hanging around on Thursday morning because I want to go out and actually follow and see what version of Brooks are we getting?
Yeah, we're going to be breaking down Brooks Koepka's performance in granular detail on the Sunday Night Podcast, I can assure you. Before we get out of here, Doug Ferguson of the Associated Press, when he was not, Rex, belittling Brooks Koepka and his major championship record in a clip that has now gone viral and people thinking that he's a jerk, that he's an a-hole, that he's just trying to alienate and infuriate Brooks Koepka. They actually have a great relationship. They've always had a great relationship. That is not exactly what it seemed in that clip, but I can assure you there is no bad blood between those two, despite what it seemed. Doug Ferguson of the AP did report, Rex, on Tuesday that the OWGR board is meeting on Wednesday, and they had a decision potentially about LIV Golf receiving official World Golf Ranking points could arrive as early as the end of this week. Would that surprise you with the LIV Golf season looming? It starts next week in Saudi Arabia, that after four plus years, they could finally be getting world ranking points.
I think after speaking with Trevor Immelman, with Doug Ferguson and some other reporters late last year at the PNC Championship that was played in Orlando, I think it was trending towards world ranking points going to LIV Golf. And look, there's going to be some caveats involved in this. LIV Golf going to 72 holes really isn't going to impact this because that wasn't the world rankings concern when they turned down that first request for world ranking points. It had more to do with the lack of meritocracy, the lack of promotion and relegation. The team aspect made some on that official world golf ranking board uncomfortable. You still have those elements to it. But Trevor made it clear, and just want to point this out, Trevor doesn't have a vote. He's just chairman of the board, but he actually does not have a vote. But it seems as if it's trending in that direction. And given the long conversations we've had over the last 2 weeks about Brooks Koepka coming back and now Patrick Reed coming back and what impact that could have on Liv Goff. And it's not a good impact. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat this. It's not good. I think Liv getting world ranking points at this point before the start of their season would level the playing field to a certain degree, because again, we can sit and circle back around to our long conversations about this pathway being created by the PGA Tour has to have a lot of Liv players looking over their shoulder. It does. I was texting with one this morning. He's looking over his shoulder. He's thinking about, maybe I come back. Maybe that's not out of the question. And probably up until the last month, it did seem out of the question. But getting world ranking points could be huge, because if you're a young player, and I've had these conversations with a lot of young players who suddenly gets a good amount of money, they're not going to get big bags anymore, I don't think, to go over to play Liv Goff, but you're going to get a decent amount of money and you have the option of getting world ranking points. That does change the equation.
Yeah. Plus the addition to 72 holes, which would probably be more palatable to a lot of players, particularly with an eye on the major championships. I did think it was notable, Rex, that at 12:01 p.m. Eastern time, I received an email from Liv Golf outlining some of their competitive and format changes for 2026. The lock zone is expanding. The open zone is including a different set of players. The drop zone is expanding to have more promotion and relegation that way. So I think all of those are potentially changes that would be more suitable, more applicable to their OWGR application that they put in. So they certainly have more pathways. The 72 hole thing, moving from 54 to 72, that was already addressed by the OWGR. They've already come up with a formula that can look at 54 holes if that's what happens, either because of weather or because that's what the tournament actually has. I still think there are some outstanding issues, and it came up a couple of weeks ago with the fact that Liv is handpicking their fields and their rosters. They had three players, did Liv, this past year who weren't in the drop zone or in what they call the open zone, where you could transfer from one team to another based on your season-long standing. But those players simply lost their playing privileges because Liv didn't want them anymore. That's crazy to think about. That would be the equivalent of the 80th ranked player in the FedEx Cup standings, even though he qualified for next year, somehow being plucked out of the FedEx Cup standings and shooed away to the Korn Ferry Tour, the Asian Tour, the European Tour, wherever else they would ply their trade. That's crazy to think about, but that's what happened on Liv with not one player, not two players, but three players for 2025, 2026. That's an outstanding issue that the OWGR would have to consider as well. All right, so we're going to have plenty to talk about on Sunday night. Brooks Koepka, the entire Farmers Insurance Open, a look ahead to Phoenix, where I will be when I'm recording the podcast on Sunday night, as well as any potential news as it relates to Patrick Reed, the OWGR decision, and the like. In the meantime, you guys know the drill, golfchannel.com for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Have a lot of content from Rex up there, a great Mike McGraw feature that you're going to want to check out on the retiring college coach, all that and plenty more. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys on Sunday night.